Hello and welcome to Dialect. I'm Tony Gosling. Dialect's Bristol's first podcast, set up in 2001 with a Millennium Grant from the Scarman Trust. We're on Bristol Community FM 93.2 every Tuesday at noon. That's bcfmradio.com/dialect. This week, Birnbeck Pier special. If you don't know where Birnbeck Pier is, you should. It's Weston-super-Mare, the north end. There are various groups trying to restore the pier. It's in a derelict state at the moment. The Birnbeck Pier .co.uk, which is the Friends of the Old Pier, it's called, and also the Birnbeck Regeneration Trust.org.uk. The pier stretches out to Birnbeck Island, but it's in a dilapidated state. And this week we speak to Steve Wide, who was born on the pier. Who better to ask about it and its history?
My name is Steve Wide. I was born in the pier house, Birnbeck Road, Weston-super-Mare, which was the pier master's house. My father, who had been in P&A Campbell's before the war, became pier master in 1938, and in 1940 he became the commanding officer of HMS Birnbeck. The Admiralty used the pier until 1946. My father remained on the pier. I lived on the pier until I was 18 and lived in Weston for over 30 years. P&A Campbell's were the paddle steamer people. When I was a kid, they had 7 paddle steamers. They used to run from Bristol, Newport, Weston, Cardiff, Penarth, Barry, Minehead, Lynmouth, Ilfracombe, Clovelly, Newquay, Swansea, Mumbles, and Tenby. They had the 7 paddle steamers, which were wonderful ships, and used to run all the time. With Birnbeck Pier, which is people call the Old Pier, that was built.
This is the one to the north, which is derelict at the moment.
Yes, this is the one that's derelict. Was built to allow people to come to Weston from all around the channel. Because when Campbell's first started, there was no railway connections for Weston or anywhere else. And the only way to get to or from Weston, or if you were lived in Bristol and wanted to go down to Devon, the only way to get there was on the paddle steamers.
Now, hang on a minute. I mean, you could go by road. Surely you could go down to the West Country.
I'm not sure how many people had the ability to do that, because the motor car hadn't been invented. So it was paddle steamers or nothing. And I grew up on the paddle steamers and on the trip round the bay boats in Weston and the fishing boats in Weston. As I say, Campbell's had 7 paddle steamers. The average carrying capacity of the paddle steamers was 1,200. We used to have...
That's a lot of people, a lot of passengers.
Yeah, we used to fill the ships. We used to have 7 ships a day coming in to the old pier in Weston. There was 2 vessels which were constantly on the ferry between Cardiff and Weston, well, Cardiff, Penarth and Weston, and Newport and Weston. On a bank holiday, we'd probably get 15, 20,000 people through in the day.
In Bristol, whereabouts did they dock here?
Their actual base was in Bristol, in Underfall Yard. But for docking, they used the concrete pontoon at Hot Wells, which is on the portway. You'll see the railings right near the lock gates. You've got railings and timber piers and things. The paddlers used to run from there. Right away up until, the 70s. Then they obviously, by then, everything it was dying down. The paddlers had gone, and they had 3 motor vessels: the St. Trillo, which they bought from the North Wales Steamship Company, the Vector, which became the Westward Ho, which was bought from the Isle of Wight Steam Company, and they had the Balmoral, which was bought from the Isle of Wight Steam Company.
In the pad steamers were too slow, were they? Too small or what?
No.
Too big?
The paddle steamers used to do 7 miles to a ton of coal. So to go down from Bristol to Avonmouth was 1 ton of coal. They were very expensive to run. They had large crews, and in my early youth, it was silver service lunches and silver service high teas. We used to fill the paddlers practically every trip. But in 1966, I think it was, the Severn Bridge was opened, and the mini car had become a major factor, and the paddle steamers were just not economical enough.
Well, that's also the close down of the railways in the, was it 63, I think, with Beeching, also was encouraging people to buy cars, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, yes.
And the opening of the motorways was, I think, late 60s, that sort of thing?
Yeah, motorways again. It was just the paddle steamers, which started running in the Bristol Channel in about 1840-odd, and they finished in the Bristol Channel in 1966.
Now, the Balmoral, I seem to remember, is still going. In fact, there may be a couple of these old ships still doing a few trips. What is there left of this today?
Well, the Balmoral was run by the Paddle Steamer Preservation Society. They have the Paddle Steamer Waverley, which was built for Caledonian McBrain, and they had the Balmoral. Now, in 1990, the then Board of Trade decided to bring in all new regulations, which cost thousands of pounds for ship owners and small craft owners. And now the MCA, which is the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency, have decreed that putting patches on ships is not allowed, and they want the Balmoral to have whatever patches she's got on her removed and to be replated. This will probably cost somewhere around £1 million. So this year, which has been a magnificent summer, the Balmoral has not run at all.
Because it's not allowed to carry any passengers?
No, she's not allowed to operate because she's got plated parts on the ship, and the MCA have decided all the plating's got to be taken off, and all the plates that are thin or whatever have got to be replated. As I say, it'll cost £1 million. So I really don't think that she'll run again, but I don't think that the MCA or their predecessors, the Board of Trade, have very much idea about summer excursion vessels, trip round the bay vessels, and all the other boats. They're bringing in regulation after regulation, and it's just bankrupting everybody.
Well, it seems, sounds to me like far too much red tape if they can't even allow these paddles. What about the other one, the Waverley? Is that still going?
The Waverley is still running. For how much longer, I'm not sure. But to give you an example of these silly regulations that were brought in, when I was a youngster, we had 8 trip round the bay boats in Weston, and we had 5 fishing boats, commercial fishing boats, in Weston. Now, there are no passenger boats in Weston. There are no fishing boats in Weston. The main place in Weston that the boats used to run from was either Anchorhead or Knightstone. The local council, when they did a load of work on the promenade, dumped thousands of tons of rubble in Knightstone Harbour. I'm sure they have done this without letting the Admiralty chart makers know, because they've reduced the depth of water in Knightstone Harbour by 3 feet. And that means that the Knightstone used to be able to be worked 2 hours either side of high water on spring tides. Now, because of this rubble that they've dumped in the harbour and round the edges of the harbour, it's 1 hour either side of high water. So that, to me, is almost horrendous that they've stopped any passenger boats running from Weston to Steepholme, Flatholme, round the bay, anywhere. It's complete. The council have completely killed them.
Well, surely there's an inevitability about this. As people's holiday habits change, many people just will get a budget flight down to Spain or somewhere around the Mediterranean. There's less people using Western, and also, you know, there's maybe just not such a demand as there used to be in the early part of the last century for this. There was obviously lots of demand then, and lots of demand up until the sort of 50s and 60s. But now people just don't want to do this anymore.
To a certain extent, that's right. The package holidays and things obviously had a huge effect. But there are a couple of places that I know that where boats are operating, and they are very successful, because quite honestly, to go to the seaside for a holiday or whatever and not to be able to get out on the water that used to be a large part of a holiday, to have a trip round the bay so you could see the whole of Weston from the water. And they'd go along Brian down from the Napoleonic Fort into the mouth of the River Axe, past Black Rock, along the seafront, and back into Knightstone.
What about the, as you were saying there, that there's been changes to the harbour, but the Flatholme and Steepholme Islands? Now, that definitely is an attraction. A lot of people staying in Weston would love to get out there. Are there any actual trips for the public during the whole year out to those islands? Maybe people can go from somewhere else if they can't go from Weston.
Well, the passenger boat that used to run from Weston, well, there was two of them. There was the Bristol Queen and the Westward Ho. The new regulations introduced by the Border Trade and MCA have made it totally uneconomical. The Steepholme people have introduced these rib inflatable boats carrying 12 people a time, and occasionally they would come over to Weston if somebody had booked a party, and they would take 12 people out to Steepholme or Flatholme or whatever. However, if you're elderly or slightly infirmed, you cannot sit in a rib boat doing 25 knots and getting hammered and thrown about all over the place. So they are really a non-starter, and they're based in Cardiff. So no, basically there's no boats at all going to Steepholme or Flatholme, which for the last, to my knowledge, 60 years has been a great draw for people using the passenger boats. If we put up a sign saying going to Steepholme or going to Flatholme, or even just doing a trip round Steepholme or Flatholme, you'd fill the boat. So people still want the trip round the bay boats, but they can't have them because the MCA have made it impossible for people to operate them at cost-wise, and Western Council have reduced... Well, not Western Council now, is it? This is North Somerset Council, have reduced the depth of water in the harbour by 3 feet. Therefore, they've killed it.
One of the problems forever in Weston has been the mud. It's Weston super mud. People joke about it, talking a bit like that. And the great way around that was, of course, the Tropicana, which was a marine lake of some sort. I'm not sure exactly if it classes a marine lake, but the idea was that you can go and have a proper swim with no mud at any time. That was closed under what pretext? Because surely that has got to be a money spinner for whoever's operating it. Why would the council close that?
Well, if you think of it, the things that were huge attractions in Weston because of the mud, halfway down the seafront, you had what you could say is the Tropicana, which was always known as the open-air pool, which was chock-a-block all the time. And then at Knightstone, you had the Knightstone swimming baths, which were always busy. And you also had the Marine Lake, where you could hire a rowing boat and row around the Marine Lake. Kids used to paddle and swim in there. And in the winter, it was dredged every winter to keep it clear. Now, unfortunately, when you have things that are run by a council which isn't even based in Weston, these things were closed. The Marine Lake is finished. The open-air swimming pool's gone. Knightstone baths have gone. All the attractions for people who wanted to go on or near water have gone.
I mean, surely, you know, they can't really justify that, can they? Because the Tropicana or the open air pool, whatever you want to call it, must have been bringing money in. I mean, it was, as you said, it was packed.
Oh yes, it used to be. It brought in money. But I mean, a perfect example of this is Portishead, where there's an open air swimming pool on the north end of Portishead seafront. That was closed by the council because they said they couldn't make it pay. It was taken over by a private firm, and in the summer it's busy, it's chock-a-block, you can't even get in there. And they have a restaurant there. The whole place has been completely redone and renovated. Wonderful place, full of people all the time. People who own it are making an awful lot of money. But to expect a council to run anything like that just will never happen.
What about the Winter Gardens and the Sovereign Shopping Centre in Weston? Because these are two, I think, fascinating things to look at. The Winter Gardens was sold for £1 to some developer. I suppose these people see themselves as maybe even speculators. You know, they're obviously doing quite well if they can buy a beautiful old building like that for £1. And then the Sovereign Shopping Centre, which 2018, this year, has just been sold for £21 million. Interesting deals, because surely from a public point of view, right now, when we're living in a retail slump, we nearly had John Lewis go bankrupt. Investing in a shopping centre seems to be the worst thing to do. It seems as if the council in Weston, this is actually West Somerset Council, are simply doing what the current owners of the Sovereign Shopping Centre want, which is to pick up basically what is a dying asset. And the real assets, things like the Winter Gardens, are something which could bring in a fantastic amount of money from events, conferences, that sort of thing, if it was run well, and have cafes, that sort of thing going on in the Winter Gardens, is being sold for next to nothing. So it almost looks as if the North Somerset Council's decisions when it comes to what's happening along the seafront at Weston are the opposite of what they should be.
Yes, I would totally agree with you there. The Winter Gardens, when I lived in Weston, was very busy. They used to have wrestling once a week. They had dances there. They had dinner dances. There was always things going on. They had antiques fairs there. Everything was happening. The Winter Gardens was quite a big centre of attraction. The shopping mall that somebody has built is absolute madness, because shops are shutting down constantly because all the business is being taken by online firms like Amazon. And to buy a shopping centre is absolute madness.
Why is it happening then?
I honestly don't know. I mean, to me, I think it's somewhat suspicious that public money is being used. Well, it's being misused, I feel. But I don't know. You know, I no longer live in Weston. I don't know. But, you know, when you look at the Nightstone Theatre when I was a youngster was a typical seaside theatre where one year we'd have Ivor Emmanuel, another year we'd have Terry Scott and Bill Maynard. We have all these kind of people. The swimming baths were always busy, and the, you know, school kids and parents and everybody, and they used to play water polo in the men's baths down there. That was a big attraction, made a lot of money. There was you had to pay obviously to go and watch it, and then you had the salt water baths again, which if they were operated properly would make money. But unfortunately, the government has set up all these different sort of councils, which are enormously big. And years ago, you had Weston Borough Council, which their main and only purpose was to look after Weston. Now, then it went to Woodspring Council. Now it's North Somerset Council. It's ridiculous. You're just building bigger and bigger and bigger bureaucracies and damaging the towns and places where that used to be very successful.
Well, there's also got to be some kind of change in the types of people that become councillors that sit around the table and actually sign these decisions off in order to, well, we're talking about 1950s, 1960s, where they were running some of these attractions, or at least they were involved in managing or deciding who's going to manage those attractions for them. Nowadays, it seems that there's quite a lot of asset stripping going on. So the people who are sitting around the table are now looking at all of the assets that the council has and thinking to themselves, what can we sell off for the most money? Although, of course, the Winter Gardens was sold off very cheap. What's the difference, do you think, in the types of people that are actually sitting around the table now as councillors making these decisions?
Well, I feel that in the 50s, I knew quite a few of the councillors. I knew a lot of the council officers. There was Richard Freer Hewish, who was the borough engineer. There was Reginald Lickfold, who was the town clerk. And we used to know the mayors because my parents were always invited to any social functions by the council, because at that time, Birnbeck Pier was bringing in a large income to Weston. You get 5,000 or 6,000 people in a day coming to Weston from South Wales and spending their money in Weston. But now it's all destroyed, and you've got these huge councils who really have got no interest in making anything successful in Weston. They'd much prefer to sell it off for silly money. And I mean, I gather that the pavilion was sold for £1. I mean, that's absolute madness.
Is there any way to turn it round, do you think?
Gosh, well, I think that the whole system, the whole political system now needs changing, because years ago, the people who were councillors, the mayors and all these people did it because they had a sense of public duty. Now, as far as I can tell, all the people running these places are in it for the money, not for as a public service point of view.
Well, look, one really important institution is the Weston Mercury. Surely they could and should be holding these people to account and naming and shaming them.
Well, actually, funny you mention the Weston Mercury, because my father-in-law owned the Weston Mercury. And in those days, the Western Mercury was an extremely impartial newspaper, which would question any decisions that were made by the council which didn't seem to be in the public interest. Unfortunately, when my father-in-law and his brother passed away, the paper got sold, and now it doesn't bother to question decisions made by councillors and things that are happening in Weston. It's everything has changed so much that not for the better. I think we're making great haste backwards.
It's interesting that when the Sovereign Shopping Centre was bought by Legal & General and West Somerset Council for £21 million, there wasn't even any comment in the Western Mercury that maybe this wasn't a good idea since so many shops were closing.
Yes, I don't think the Western Mercury now is a proper local newspaper. It used to question all the decisions that were made, and people on the council would be questioned and asked why this decision had been made and what, and they would get sensible answers which they would then publish in the paper. But since it's been sold, it's a bit like the council, who's run by people, many of whom don't have nothing to do with Weston. The Western Mercury is owned by people who have nothing to do with Weston. They have no interest in Weston. All they're interested in is selling newspapers and selling advertising space.
I'm going to have to bring you back to this question of how to turn things round, because I think we need to have a bit of light at the end of the tunnel. Is there anything you can see going on in Weston now that shows a little bit of light?
Well, I don't think so. As I say, I no longer live in Weston, but I went down to Weston quite recently because I'm involved in the preservation of Birnbeck Pier, and I drove around Weston, well, down the seafront to uphill and back again, and to me it's like a disaster zone.
Well, it's only, I suppose, people like you who can remember it in its heyday that would say that. What's happening with the North Pier then?
Well, the North Pier, a group of people have set up a trust to try and save the pier. I gather that the people that own the pier, I could be wrong on this, but as I gather, it's mainly an American bank. And the same person owned the Royal Pier Hotel. The Royal Pier Hotel was put up for auction by sealed bid about 6 months ago. What will happen to the old pier, I don't know. It wants at least £15 million spending on it just to put the bridge back into a usable condition, because one must remember that the Birnbeck Pier is the only pier that is actually a bridge from the mainland to an island, and then you had a jetty built off of the island for ships to come alongside. Now it's been left to rack and ruin. Nobody's bothered to do anything about it. And, you know, in my day when I was living on the pier, we had a staff of 20 people who were permanent summer and winter, and then obviously the catering staff were summer only. But we used to do maintenance all through the winter, maintaining the jetty, maintaining the bridge, painting, replacing girders that were rotten. There was a constant stream of work to keep the pier and the bridge in an open condition. Now, I don't think anybody gives a damn other than these people who've set up this trust to try and save it. Thank you.
coffee, I'm in trouble. Black coffee, I see double. Ooh, ooh, ooh. How am I gonna get home? Black coffee, I'm so dizzy. Black coffee, please get busy. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Help me so I can get home. Had a little too much hoopy soup. All I meant to take was one. Now my head is going loopy-loop. Some stuffy kid, what fun, oh. Black coffee, help a fella. Black coffee, what'll I tell her? Ooh, ooh, ooh. I'm afraid to go home.
Coffee from the wonderful Carol Gibbons. You can find a lot of recordings from him from the Second World War, where I think it was the Savoy he used to play in the evenings to keep spirits up during World War II. With him was Marjorie Stedford, and that was recorded in 1935. Well, the things have been happening in Portishead, as you mentioned, with the swimming pool at Portishead, and for example, at Clevedon, the pier there, being very well looked after. Why? Surely this sort of thing could happen in Weston too?
Well, it could do. I mean, I was actually quite involved with Clevedon because there was a gentleman in Clevedon called Ralph Fryer who was a big fundraiser for Clevedon Pier, and he used to charter my passenger boats to do evening cruises to raise money for the pier. When the pier was rebuilt and reopened, politics got involved and they wouldn't allow my vessels to use Clevedon Pier.
Well, why not?
Politics. And anyway, I got hold of Ralph and he got a movement going and we finished up being able to use Clevedon Pier. But all these things nowadays, there's so much politics involved in things that it's a nightmare. Nothing will ever get done properly because nobody has, one, nobody's got the ability to do it, and secondly, the local councils haven't got the slightest interest in it happening.
Well, look, you say politics, but I'd put it a different way. I'd say that those that are in charge in various ways through these various councils, etc., and the regulators don't want anyone to do anything unless they're in their little club.
Well, I call it politics. That's a cover word for all kinds of things.
Why is that, do you think? Because surely the people that we put in charge of these regulators and the councils are there as public servants. They're not really there to try and control everything and to stop anybody doing anything unless they're one of their friends.
You're living in the 50s. That doesn't happen anymore. You've got the MCA who have destroyed all the small craft, and as I say, the Balmoral won't be long before they destroy the Waverley. You've got local councils who have got no interest in anything. The only interest that the North Somerset Council seem to have is the Grand Pier and the area around the Grand Pier. But I understand that the owners of the Grand Pier, after it had burnt down, had a large amount of conflict with the council to get it done. Now, a perfect example of this is on Birnbeck Pier, the old pier, which is derelict. The council have claimed one of the buildings as being theirs, and they have insisted that the people running the Preservation Society pay rent for this building. The building is part of Birnbeck Pier, always has been, always will be. And if one of the councillors likes to look back in their records, when John Critchley bought the Birnbeck Pier, the council took him to court claiming rights over a lot of the land. The council lost, Critchley won, and if the councillors like to look back at that case, I think it'll frighten them to death.
Well, it sounds like they're just making it up. Now, I mean, it's interesting you being brought up on the pier. Not many people can say that. What was it like, the average day as you were growing up there?
Oh, it was wonderful. We used to start at 7 in the morning, sweeping up and clearing up the island and all the mess and everything else. Then the first boat would come in about 9:30 in the morning. And then we'd have boats in, a stream of boats, and then you have the low water where there wasn't enough water for the boats to come in. They'd either anchor off on the mud patch up in Sand Bay, or they'd go to Barry, or they'd go to Clevedon. And then as soon as the tide was back in and there was 7 foot of water on the face of the jetty, the paddlers started coming in again. Sometimes you'd have three paddle steamers waiting to come in. And if you take it that each paddle steamer had 1,000 people on, that's 3,000 people landing on this landing stage of Birnbeck Pier in about 20 minutes.
So were there cafes, things like that on the pier too?
Oh gosh, yes. On the pier, when I was there, we had the public bar, which was on the west end of the building. Then you had the restaurant, which was a very good restaurant with a cocktail bar. Then you had the kitchens and servery, and then you had the cafeteria at the front of the building, on the east end of the building. And the restaurant, I got to know loads of people from the council, and officers and councillors, because on a Saturday evening, on a nice day, they'd walk across the pier, come into the restaurant where I would be with my parents or whatever, and they'd sit down and chat and have a drink and have a meal. And we had, you know, on a good Saturday night, we probably had 150 local people coming there for a meal, and the whole thing was, you know, really good, and the food was excellent. Nice cocktail bar where people could come and have a drink. One chap that I got very friendly with down there was the gentleman that owned Walker Ling's shops in Weston, and got on very well. He was a hell of a nice chap, and he's come down with his wife. Freya Hewishes used to come down regularly. All sorts of people would come down on a Saturday to have a meal on the pier and have a walk, watch the boats coming in. It was just a hub of activity and interest.
And were most of these ships, were they mostly going backwards and forwards across the channel to the other side?
Yes, you had the two ships on the ferry. The ferry was Cardiff, Penarth, Weston, Penarth, Cardiff, or Newport, Weston. They ran, used to take about 40 minutes to get over the other side. Then they'd discharge, load up again, come back to us, and you'd have two ships doing that virtually all day long. and you'd have the boat coming down from Newport. I may tell you an interesting story about the boat coming from Newport. Every year, Vernon's football pools, which had a base in Newport, used to charter one of the ships to bring all their ladies that worked there as checkers and cashiers and everybody else to Weston for the day. And there would be about 400 of them, with their families, obviously. And this one Saturday, we got down, my father and myself and the pier staff, got down to the pier at about 7:30, went in to sit at the restaurant to find the kitchens to find out if everything was going all right. And we found the chef totally comatose, obviously been on the bottle all night. And it finished up that myself and Wilf Payne and one of the other pier men had to cook breakfast for all these people coming from Vernon's pools. And we turned the cafeteria into a dining room for them. We got all this food cooked, sausages, eggs, bacon, fried bread, tomatoes, everything, all cooked. Boat turns up. The weather was too bad. They couldn't get alongside the pier, so they had to turn around and take all these people back over to Newport again. And we, the pier staff, had to eat as much of this food as we could. And I had a boxer dog at the time, Leo, which was a well-known dog by practically everybody in South Wales. Even he got sick of the sight of sausages. So, you know, it was all great fun, but hard work, but enjoyable work. And when I was a bit older, I worked for Campbell's on their ships. And I left Campbell's in 1977, and they closed in 1979. But up until then, myself and my sister had an absolutely wonderful life, working very hard, you know, and making sure that everything was okay. We had one bank holiday Monday where the ships had been coming over all day, bringing people over from South Wales. And they all decided they were going to go back on the last boat. When the last boat left, there was about 4,000 people on the island waiting to go back to South Wales. Campbell's diverted ships from all over the place, and we had to get all these people back to Cardiff. And the last boat back was the Glengower, who left at 2 o'clock in the morning from the pier. And she was the biggest carrying capacity boat that Campbell's had. But I think I can say now, because they're all dead and gone, everything else, she was overloaded by 400 people.
What about today, though? Obviously, there are still people that would like to go and enjoy the channel around that part of Weston, etc. Is there anywhere that people can go to get a decent trip out on a boat?
Well, I went out on the Balmoral a couple of years ago. There's a couple of people who'd worked on the Balmoral.
Well, that's laid up now, the Balmoral.
Oh, yeah, she laid up now because the MCA want this £1 million worth of work doing.
So where can people go to get a trip? I mean, surely there must be something. Like you mentioned these small boats that go out, which are no good for elderly people, to Flatholm and Steepholm. Is that all there is now?
It's so irregular that, you know, you have to book and make sure that you can fill the whole boat, and then you have to make sure that the weather's good, and then if you're lucky, they'll come over and take you. But that is the only way you can get a boat ride from Weston. Now that the Balmoral's gone, it's the only way you can get a boat ride from Bristol, Clevedon, Weston, Penarth, Barry, Minehead, Ilfracombe, Lundy. The only boat operating now is the Oldenburg, which runs from Ilfracombe and Biddeford to Lundy Island. That is the only passenger boat, you know, substantial passenger boat running in the Bristol Channel, and her license is for 250 people. That's the only boat in the entire channel.
Are there any prospects at anything looking like it might happen at Birkbeck Pier?
Honest answer, no.
Oh, God.
I don't think it will. The amusing part on that is when Clevedon Pier fell down in the 70s, the health and safety executive up in London had decided that all piers had to be weight tested to make sure that they were strong enough to carry people. They came down on the Friday and they weight tested Clevedon Pier, and they passed it as fit for purpose, and on the Sunday the 200 foot span collapsed into the sea.
Do you think that the testing actually aided the collapse?
Yes, the testing aided the collapse. I mean, you know, people who run piers, or who used to run piers, they do know what they're doing. You know, and you get somebody from the health and safety executive up in London, writes out an order. It was the same with the trip round the bay boats. There was a chap in the Board of Trade called Graham, Mr. Graham, who brought out all these new regulations. And I had chaired a meeting at the Arnolfini in Bristol, and for all the pleasure boat operators from the southwest, and we had about 200 turn up, and I had four people from the Board of Trade, and everybody was against it. Even the air sea rescue people were against some of the regulations. And when the meeting is finished, I turn round to Mr. Allen, who was the senior guy from the Board of Trade, and I said, within 2 years, you will destroy virtually all trip boats. And within 5 years, they'd achieved that. I was wrong by 3 years, but 5 years, that's it.
Do you think the English are a little bit too well-behaved?
You have this stupid culture now with government departments and everybody else.
It seems we're being subservient. We're being told X, Y, and Z, and we just simply bow our heads and say, OK, that's fine.
Oh, yes, totally, totally. The people up in Whitehall feel that they know everything and they've got all the knowledge that anybody ever needs, and they just bring out regulations because it shows that they're doing something.
Tell us about some of the writing you do, because I know you're a bit of a historian.
Yes, I'm writing a book, three books at the moment. One on Birnbeck Pier, the history. One on Campbell's paddle steamers. And one as a sort of personal thing, as a tribute to my father, who retired from Campbell's as master in 1979 when he was 76, and the only reason he retired is because the Board of Trade forced him to. He got an MBE from the Queen, and he'd served his time in square rig sailing ships, his apprenticeship in square rig sailing ships, and he was at sea for 60 years and master for 50. And I think that that's something worth writing about.
What about the Naval College up at Portishead? Because that almost seems to have been forgotten about, although it was quite an important institution for a long, long time, supplying young men for the Merchant Navy.
Oh, yeah, the Nautical Institute up in Portishead. That's now flats. Somebody bought it for a song, turned it into flats, and they're very expensive flats. So there's no nautical school up there at all.
Okay, Steve, just recap these books. When are they due to be published? When can people get hold of them?
I've been in hospital for 3.5 months, so at the moment I'm a bit stuck for writing them, but I hope to get them done in the next year or so that they can get them published, and I hope people will find them interesting, because it's my recollections going back 60 odd years, and my father, who told me all sorts of things. I mean, an example, when I was a kid, I used to go on the paddle steamers regularly because my dad had been on them before the war, and all the skippers and mates and everybody knew him, knew me and everything else. When I was 10, I decided to go on boats every day. So I said to Dad, this is what I want to do. He said, yeah, that's okay. He said, which one are you going on? I said, well, I'd like to go on the Britannia. So I went on the Britannia with Albert Murphy as master and Bill Watson as mate. All the crews and the masters and the mates and everybody, they'd all been in sailing ships, coastal sailing ships, deep sea sailing ships, everything. And I was very fortunate that I kept my mouth shut and my ears and my eyes open. So I've got the history going back certainly for 100 years from the knowledge and information that I gleaned from these people as a kid, and that is all going to get written down.
The other thing to say positive, on the positive side, is actually there's a massive potential for business to be thriving along the coasts of the Bristol Channel now.
Oh, absolutely. If somebody could get a boat and get around these stupid regulations that the MCA have brought in and could run a passenger boat, they'd keep it full virtually all the summer. I mean, you imagine this summer having a passenger boat running around the channel. People would have been queuing up all over the place to get on it. You've got so many seaside towns on the Bristol Channel, none of them have got a ship that can take them any distance. We used to run down to Tenby or to Newquay in Cornwall, and once a year we used to go down in the Paddlers and in the Balmoral to the Scilly Isles. We used to do a trip from Bristol, Weston, Penarth, down to St Ives or Penzance, and put the people up in hotels overnight, and the next day we'd go off to the Scilly Isles, and they'd have a day on the Scilly Isles, then they would come back, and we'd take them back to St Ives or Penzance, they'd go back to their hotels for the night, the next day we would take them back up to Weston, Penarth, Bristol, the lot. We were only allowed to carry 250 passengers on that. And every year, their tickets were sold out before the middle of the season.
Well, that's all for this week. Dialects, Bristol's first weekly podcast. You can download it to listen on your phone or in the car. Subscribe to our email list and listen the week before broadcast, if you like, at dialectradio.co.uk. Thanks to our guest this week, Steve Wide. His group's the Friends of the Old Pier. That's at burnbeck-pier.co.uk. There's also the Burnbeck Regeneration Trust.org.uk. All trying to restore the pier which runs out to Burnbeck Island, the north end of Weston-super-Mare. Thanks also to studio engineers Dave Pizanko and Josh Chivers. Dialects of Bristol Broadband Co-op production. Catch us on Bristol Community FM 93.2 every Tuesday at noon, and anyone can contribute. Contact us at the People's Republic of Stokes Croft, just off Jamaica Street. They're online at prsc.org.uk. Volunteer with us if you like, or for hundreds of opportunities across Britain via the National Volunteering website, do-it.org. Thanks for listening to Dialects Friends of the Old Burnbeck Pier special with Steve Wide. And one of the things I'm going to be doing in future weeks is uncovering who it was that set fire to the pier in the first place. That will be interesting. I'm Tony Gosling, wishing you a very good week. I'll be back on Friday with my 2-hour BCFM politics show live from 6 till 8 p.m. Meanwhile, till next Tuesday, midday, from the Dialect crew, goodbye for now.
The thought of you, the very thought of you.